So our guest this morning has only recently arrived in Hull, only a week or so ago.
Yeah.
But you have known the city for quite some time.
Yeah.
So let's just, for the benefit of the listener, if you could introduce yourself to the tape, that'd be great.
Yeah, my name is Sidi Maju, originally from Sierra Leone and a district called Connor, but I've also lived in Freetown, which is the twin city of Hull.
Indeed, yeah. Mm. Yeah. So how long ago, when were you born?
I was born in the 1974.
Yeah. Right, okay. Well, what are your earliest memories then? Your very earliest memories?
In the Sierra Leone or in Hull?
In Sierra Leone.
Yeah. Well, because I live in the Diamond area, that was a very interesting where you if there's a, during the rainy season, you could walk on the street and there's a chance you'll find a diamond. And this city was very influential to the British at that time because, you know, the British were looking for wealth. And when they discovered diamond in Sierra Leone in the 1930s, that area was highly populated with people from all nations of the world, from Belgium, from England. That's the type of thing I enjoyed. People from different countries, Ghana, Gambia, Nigeria, Mali. It's like the whole world was there. It was like a melting pot. That's what I enjoyed about the district I'm from. Mm. No, I prefer to say now it's a city. Because the vision for the district to become a city, I'm very passionate about the district I'm from.
Tell me about family life.
Well, family life, I'm from a polygamous home where my dad had four wives. So that's a challenge because I went to a Western-style school. I did not go to a Muslim school. I went to an Anglican and Methodist school. So that was very interesting.
Yeah,
and most of my friends I went to school with are not in polygamous homes. So it was fascinating when I'm explaining about the challenges and some of the other advantages being in a polygamous home also.
Well, let's expand on that a little bit more because I'm quite fascinated by that. Well, you're living in a family where your father had got more than one wife.
Yeah.
Did you have much contact with children from the other wives?
Yeah, I just see them as my brothers and sister. There's not much difference.
Yeah.
There's a politics in every home, even if it's just the one that is now a polygamous home. There's always politics in the house, not just because it's a polygamous home. I know that within mother, father, and children.
Yeah,
you know, even in the Bible, we have all them story with Esau and Esau and, you know, Ian and Cabel and all that. There's always politics in the family. You'll know that yourself. So it's nothing to do because it's polygamy so much. But it was fascinating, though, because you always have people around you and the mothers look after each other and you don't need all this babysitting thing because there's enough people around. And probably if my mom is ill, the other wives will also be cooking. And so the advantage is there.
Have you kept in touch? I mean,
yeah, regularly. I speak to all my family members. Well, especially in the type of families, it's a male-dominated, though the women carry the family no matter what you say. The man is the breadwinner, but the women and the wives does a lot of work in keeping the house safe and in a peaceful atmosphere.
So what about work and trade? What were the family involved with?
Well, my dad was a businessman. He started with diamond. And at that time, there was a lot of illicit mining going on because the companies took over the whole land and the people said, what about us? So some people were doing illicit mining. Many people in Connor District were involved in illicit mining. Even the chiefs who sold land to the companies were also engaged in their private mining and stuff like that. I think my father found a diamond, which worth 2 liens at that time. That should have been around £2 in the 60s, I think. And £2 is a lot of money, 60s or 70 at that time, the value of £2 in the 60s.
Mm-hmm.
So he started trading with that money in a restaurant and have a farm also. And later he became a very successful businessman, owned like 4 petrol stations, gas stations, and had a shop in the city, Freetown. He was doing well, and he used to even come to London to see his doctor, so because he was also diabetic, like myself.
So what were your father's expectations for you and your
siblings?
Well,
my father, because he's a businessman who did not have formal education, but I believe he's more successful than me. I don't think I'll be able to compete with a man like that, because I'm even struggling to manage one wife, and he was telling me, so you can't even manage one woman, so I had four. So that's a competition in itself that he understand. He said, I did not have formal education, but I paid for your school fees, and he looked after nearly the whole family, because in Africa, if you are more successful, you look after all the children, your brothers, your uncles, your aunties, and he was the key player in the whole family, like. And when we say family, it's not just his wife and his kids, his brother's kids and stuff like that. And he was a very generous man. He did well for himself, to be honest, and we are still enjoying that legacy, because he has a few houses which still is used to collect rents, and we rent them out, and the family is benefiting from them. I don't think I'll compete with that man.
So tell me something about your journey then, of how you... Why did you decide to leave Africa?
The war in Sierra Leone is not a war that is hidden, as you know, blood diamonds. And so the region I'm from was really hit hard because of the diamonds. And Charles Taylor, who was the catalyst to the war in Sierra Leone, because it was a spillover from Liberia, a neighboring country, which have similar history. Mm-hmm. Liberia, which is more of the American Freetown, because it was the same history, freed loyalists and enslaved Africans who were brought, but they were already African-Americans who were brought to Monrovia. So that was actually copied from what Wilberforce and Co. and other humanitarian did for Freetown. It's the similar strategy, because Americans wanted to bring... United States wanted to bring their own free and enslaved, freed enslaved Africans to Freetown. They said, no, you have to find your own place. You know, that rivality between two big powers at that time. Mm. So they end up having Liberia and did the same thing.
So you left Africa when?
Yeah, during the war in the 2000. Mm. The war has kicked off and it was calming down at that time. So I decided... Well, it was not safe anymore to be in Sierra Leone. I went to neighboring country, Guinea. Then from Guinea, I have to fly into the United Kingdom. Then I sought my asylum at that time. And they know about our problem, because the British, the Queen's Regiment was there. So they were very aware, and Tony Blair got it right there. I know he got it wrong in Iraq, but to be honest, they stepped in at the right time. And the people of Sierra Leone wanted peace. We had a bit of peace now, and we are progressing, but there are a lot of challenges in Sierra Leone at the moment, as you know. Mm-hmm. So that's why I end up here. And the story is also, I was asked to come to Hull, because when I came to London, I did not like London. It's too fast. Mm-hmm. So I had a friend in Liverpool, and I'm a Liverpool FC fan. So I said, well, that would be the right city. So I went there, and the Home Office was telling me, now you have to come to Hull. I said, no, on that night I was supposed to come. I saw on the television, and Hull was having a bad press from a comedian. He looks very much Asian, Iranian guy. He was talking about a lot of barriers in Hull for refugees and immigrants, even though Hull had a long history of having ethnic minority and black people, especially African seamen and seamen from other parts of the world. But I think that died out when the industry collapsed, the shipping industry collapsed. So I think the legacy is not much here compared to that of Liverpool, because Liverpool was a bigger port and more thriving port than Hull. So he was showing all that differences on the TV, that they said, no, I'm not coming here. So, but I came 2006. Then I understand it's the twin city of Freetown. Then I said, wow. Then I understand that also Wilberforce is from here, and I'm a big fan of the emancipation, because I'm even in Sierra Leone. Freetown is part of the school curriculum from primary school, to learn about slavery, the emancipation, Wilberforce, all of them who were involved, Thomas Peters. So it was fascinating to know Wilberforce is from here, and we have a town or a village in Sierra Leone, in Freetown, named after Wilberforce, Wilberforce Village, and some of my family members live there. So it gives me the appetite to say, wow, it's not a bad city. So in 2007, I came, I bought my own ticket, because there was a lecture about William Wilberforce associated with the Act, the 200 years of the Act of the Abolition when it was passed, 1807 to 2007. So, and the speaker was honorable. He was the Prime Minister at that time of Barbados, Arthur Owen. I met with a gentleman in the train who was coming to Hull, and he'd get lost. So I said, okay, I will help you. I'm coming to Hull. So on our way, he was talking that he's associated with the president's office and he needs some help. So I help him. I help him to get a hotel. I'm in a guest house where I was. So by the night time, he was so tired. So I said, okay, I'm going out just to see the city, what's up. So I got all the information he needed. So he was very pleased and asked the contingent that I should be part of the VIP contingent. So I was sitting in the coach with Wilberforce, the great grandson, who is also called William Wilberforce. We spoke a lot. And I was surprised he did not know the original Wilberforce had a town named after him in Freetown. And he did not know they have a hall named after William Wilberforce. I was so shocked. I said, how come he doesn't know about all this stuff? And he promised that he would one day visit Freetown to see all this stuff. And the lectures was very interesting. I enjoyed it. And so John Prescott was putting his own defense and about the emancipation, that they don't benefit much from it, which was not true. And Arthur Owens was saying what makes this country great partly was the money from slavery, which was true also, because even the churches were involved, even the royal family was involved, and a lot of hidden stuff from his speech come out, which I learned from, which was very fascinating. Good event.
Good. So do you think children in school are being told the real story of Wilberforce and what the UK, what England was like beforehand?
Well, you have to search thoroughly. I don't think the school curriculum wanted some of this information, because if you have glorified people who have not done things rightly in the 1800 and 1900, so now you want to actually change the story. It's difficult, especially some authors were very biased when they are writing the slavery thing. But the good thing also about England participation in the slavery and the emancipation, it is not the Brits who started slavery. It was the Spanish and that part of the world who started, when Christopher Columbus went to the Caribbean. And I don't know whether he was looking for why he was looking. Accidentally, he ended up in the Caribbean and said he had discovered. And part of that story, if you dig deep, you will see that even him, he lied a lot. He had to make people swear not to say things. Even the guy who was the captain in the ship, according to the story I've read, was a black Moors. You know, they were the people who conquered Spain earlier in the 800 and all that. So they have been there before him. So Columbus came to the king and queen and told them, these people he met, they are very humble, they can be good Christian, and they could also be easily enslaved, because he was a businessman who wanted percentage. So it was fascinating how that story now has to be changed. Columbus is not a popular person anymore in the Caribbean and Africa, because we have understand the history. They glorify Columbus. In America, they celebrate some of his special days, because as the founder of America or whatever. But now most of the conscious Africans and people from the diaspora don't want to celebrate Christopher Columbus. I think his statue was knocked down in Liverpool. So a lot of reggae artists like Bob Marley, Bonnie Spear will sing his, in their song Christopher Columbus, Damn Nasty Liar. You know what I mean? So people are becoming conscious. So how can they change that history overnight in the schools? It's going to be a difficult one. So the black history should have been part of this type of thing. Not actually being very aggressive, but in a very diplomatic way, trying to change that story and tell it how it is, the fact. And we learn from it so it won't happen again. Because even today, modern slavery is still happening in different form, even with the bankers putting people in debt. So modern slavery is still good. But I think the school should do more to help teach the fact about the story and how we could look at the past and learn to shape the future so we live in harmony, because that's the main thing. It's not about, you slave us, people start to quarrel about the past. It's about to learn from it. And we move forward, because we're living now in a multicultural Britain where a man with a turban from India could sound British, and he sound more British. You understand where I'm coming from? Mm. And a Muslim also, say I'm a British and proud to be a British at the same time, is given the freedom to worship, which the, in the law here, you are allowed to worship freely as long as you don't disturb anybody or those nuisance who are time bombs killing people in the name of Islam. Mm. They are not a good example. But I believe they are in the minority. So we have to work hard to make sure they don't win, we win. We the people who believe in a peaceful way of worshipping, at the same time proud to be British.
Mm.
That's how I see it.
So what projects are you going to be involved with?
So the history about the African seamen is one history I don't think they have touched on that side. They have done a lot of, because I went to the museum many times, I come, they touch on more of the Scandinavian seamen, and they used to go to Liverpool, from Liverpool then to the United States, because Liverpool was a world seaport at one time. So that's a good connection between the two cities. What I find out, they did not touch a lot about the African seamen and their local wives, because there is a British aspect of it. Most of them did not come with their wives, so they end up having British wives. So it's very important those children who come out of this relationship get the African side of their heritage. Because if you go now on Google search, you want to do family tree, it's a very fascinating family tree. But when you get to the African side, there's not much record for them. And some of the parents also left. So I did a lot of interview around people of mixed heritage in Liverpool. And a lot of topics come around. Some are angry that their fathers left. Others understand why the fathers left, because at that time, Britain was not too tolerant. Mm. They can't get jobs. Some are highly educated. They can't get jobs. So, and you know, all these barriers, some of them have to leave. And some of them also already had families in Africa before they came here. Some sacrifice for support those families in Africa, but we are still here to represent their children that they had here. So that was a difficult one. Other people said, no, I will sacrifice those who are here. I'm going to Africa and look after that family. And not many of the children were aware of that, that these parents who were here already had families in Africa, but they are in love here. And, you know, human being, you are in a seaport for 3 months and you understand.
So are you expecting to to uncover many of those stories in Hull, as you did in Liverpool?
Yeah, well, I got the records here. As you see, these are all records. Because the lucky thing, this gentleman here, who is called Daniel Howard Morris from Sierra Leone, he was the secretary of all the United Kuru Association, which is the people from Liberia and Sierra Leone. Because most of the Liberian seamen have to come to Sierra Leone, because Sierra Leone has a link with Britain, while Liberia had a link with America. So for them to come to Britain, they needed to come to Sierra Leone. And the British government, we are very aware how good the Kuru tribe is, a tribe which is nearly everywhere in West Africa, from Ivory Coast. Even Didier Drogba is from that tribe, even though he's from Ivory Coast. But most of them settled in Liberia, probably one of the best seamen from Africa. So the British were very aware of that. So they created a special town for them in Freetown called Kuru Town Road and Kuru Bay, so to honor them. So they give them a piece of land, some become citizen of Sierra Leone under the Commonwealth. And so they were able, most of them were able to come. They were the first seamen in Sierra Leone, not even the indigenous Sierra Leoneans. So some of them do live in Hull City, and they were members of the Kuru Society or Association in Liverpool. So it shows Liverpool was the headquarters of the seamen, not even London. Mm. That's how powerful it was. So some of the names are found in this book. Some of the addresses, you can see them in Hull.
Well, that's fascinating to see how that is going to progress and develop over the next year or so. Mm-hmm. It's great, actually, that you've come to Hull with a real remit of something that you want to pursue.
Yeah.
Let's go back to yourself as an African now, living in the West, in Great Britain, particularly here in Yorkshire. Explain to me some of the differences just 1 week into living in Hull that you've seen or identified between what you had in Liverpool, a very, very multicultural society over in Liverpool community, and what you've experienced so far in Hull.
Well, I can see a lot of similarities, even the name of streets in Liverpool. I saw Percy Street, Which is in Liverpool, of course. Victoria Street, you'll have it all over the Commonwealth countries. Mm. But I'm seeing a lot of similarities. Even when I go to the dock, the Princess Quay and around the marinas, I saw them brown buildings, very similar with Liverpool seaports. Mm. Very, very similar. And that's one. And even I went to a place called... what's the name of this place? Princess Avenue.
Yeah.
I used to live at number 34 Princess Avenue in Liverpool. So it was when I saw it, it was so fascinating. That was my second address in Liverpool, 34 Princess Avenue. Even before I came to Liverpool, I went to see one of my friends who still lived there because I no longer live in that address. Then I saw the park they have close to Princess Avenue. Is it Pearson's Park? Very similar to Princess Park. And the day I went to see the capital city of culture, because they were encouraging people to apply for the community grant, when I finished talking about this project, then I came out, I saw someone from Liverpool. He was sitting there, a mixed race lad who is of Liberian heritage, whose father's name is in this book. Immediately I showed him, he said, yes, my mom had a copy of this. Then I know his cousin, who I took to Gambia, because I did a trip during the capital city of culture 2009 to take the local lads to see West Africa. Because if you look at Gambia, it was the last country in West Africa to decolonize by Britain. The young people here, some of them have been taken to Freetown in some schools. And when they come back, because I met some of them in some of the local pubs, when I said I'm from Freetown, oh, one of them said, oh, our school went to Freetown. So I can see a lot of similarities here. And, you know, we have Liverpool Street in Freetown. And we also have Wilberforce Street in Freetown. You see where I'm coming from? Mm. So there's a lot of similarities with Hull and Liverpool. The only difference is it's more diverse there than here when it comes to diversity. And you can't beat that because Liverpool have the oldest black community in Europe.
If you could import one piece of African culture to, say, to the city of Hull or to East Yorkshire, what would that be?
Well, being a Fulani, I'm not using tribe to be divisive. I always love that tribal heritage, but not to be used because sometimes politicians use it in Africa during election. They divide the community on tribal lines for elections, which I don't like because people who used to live next door neighbors enjoy their... neighborhood in a peaceful and tranquility standard will all be attacked during the elections, where people will use the tribal. If you know your tribe is majority, you make sure you divide so you get all your tribe voting for you. I don't like that. But I love that tribal history because that what makes Africa diverse. Britain have lost that because you also used to have tribes. The Celts, everybody now want to speak English because that's what the British enforce on people. Even in Wales, they are losing some of that. I love that tribal part of things because I'm from a Fulani tribe. That's the type of thing I want to bring here because it's not, you don't see a lot of Fulanis out here. Fulanis mostly are in the United States of America. In Britain here, Fulani started to come here not long ago because most of them will go to France because most of the Fulanese areas are colonized by French-speaking countries. Though Nigeria had a bit of Fulanese, but I love to bring the Fula culture to the whole city, which will be a unique one because the Fulani are the largest nomadic tribe in the world. And I went to, is it Beverly? I went to a place called Westwood, pasturing. Oh, it was fascinating to see these cows because they are the symbol of the Fulani tribe. We're herdsmen, herdmans, and... we are cattle rearers, and that's part of our tradition. So it's something I would love to link with West Africa and this city. I know it's not classed as Hull, but it's next door neighbor, Beverly. So I enjoy that part of things. So I want to bring that alive, linking with Africa, way of doing our own animal husbandry and cattle rearing, because it's definitely we still do it the traditional way.
How difficult is it, though, to get that balance right between being really proud of your heritage but equally integrating into the community of Hull?
Yeah, well, even though I'm from Sierra Leone, I'm a Fulani, but you can meet a Gambian also who is a Fulani. You can meet a Senegalese who is a Fulani. So that will bring unity, because when Europe went to Africa, they did not take account of the kingdoms, because even Ghana had their own kingdom, the Ashanti. That was a tribe. The Ashanti have their kingdom. Everybody have their tribal kingdom, but they were living in harmony, even though, you understand what I mean? It's except when they're at war with each other, because people may have, just like the World War II, World War I, it was misunderstood, one country and the other. They do have that, but they were definitely living in harmony, because there was a time when the Mali Empire was one of the greatest empires, when they had Mansa Musa bringing all the kingdoms together. First it was in Ghana, then it shifted to Mali. So even being from the Fulani tribe, I can work with other tribe, because there are some similarities in culture. So we can still work together. You tell them it's not about celebrating those wars. It's about celebrating when we live in harmony. So that's the type of way I want to celebrate and integrate my Fulani tribe with the rest of the other cultures.
Absolutely fascinating chatting to you. You're the wealth of knowledge that's up there.
You know, thank you.
There's a whole lot more that's got to come out.
Thank you.
Share with us at some point. That's really good. Thank you very much. Thank you.